Dharma talk this morning is going to be on one of our women ancestors, a very great ancestor, Sewell. And the name of this talk is Sewell's Unmoving Mind. The setting, Tang Dynasty, China. The Tang Dynasty stretched from 618 to 906. It was widely regarded as the pinnacle of imperial China, with great cultural and political achievements. It's considered the greatest age of Chinese poetry. Many famous painters were active. Court music flourished, and woodblock printing was developed, the first printing. It was also the golden age of Zen. Within a few teaching generations, we have the sixth patriarch, Great Master Ma, Shi Tao, Nan Xuan, Zhou Zhou, Wang Po, Lin Qi, and many others. In the middle of the Tang Dynasty, from 755 to 763, there was a horrific war, the An Lushan Rebellion. Accounts vary, but according to some, up to two-thirds of the population perished, many by famine. There was great displacement, refugees. Census record keeping after the war wasn't as good, so the two-thirds estimate might be somewhat in doubt, but in any case, it was a very, very devastating time, very brutal. The Tang Dynasty never recovered, and soon after the rebellion, people were already referring to the period before the rebellion as the Golden Age. Introduction to Sewell. The story of Sewell comes to us from dropping ashes on the Buddha. I couldn't find any additional information on her. There's probably some out there, but it's just not translated into English. The story has some other information or enough information that we can piece some things together, though. Sewell's teacher was none other than Great Master Ma, who lived from 709 to 788. The last 20 years of his life was spent at his temple. And since Sewell encountered him at his temple when she was a little girl, we can estimate that Sewell was born between 758 and 788, if she was about 10 when she first encountered, when the story began. So Sewell was either born during the An Lushan Rebellion or very soon after it. She certainly grew up in a very difficult time, to say the least. Many Zen masters have said that difficult situations are good for our practice. We've heard it said a bad situation is a good situation. Sewell and this remarkable group of Zen masters in this time immediately around the An Lushan Rebellion are certainly a testimony to that. So here's Sewell's story. Among the students of great Zen master Ma, there was a layman named Chang. This man was a very devout Buddhist who bowed and chanted sutras twice a day and paid frequent visits to the Zen master. He would always take along his little daughter, Sewell. The little girl was even more devout than her father. She would join him every day for bowing and chanting and looked forward with the greatest pleasure to seeing the Zen master. One day, during a visit, Majo said to her, "Since you are such a good girl, I will give you a present. My present is the words Kwan Sem Bolsal. You must repeat the Bodhisattva's name over and over, as much as you can. Then you will find great happiness." Great Master Ma is often seen as this fierce, towering, powerful Zen master, twisting noses and shouting in people's faces until they're deaf for 3 days. But you can see here that he also had a very gentle and kind side where a little girl would look forward to her visits with him. So after they came home, Sewell's father gave her a picture of the Bodhisattva to hang on her wall. She spent many hours in front of it chanting Kwan Sem Bolsal, Kwan Sem Bolsal. Gradually, she came to chant it all day long, wherever she was, while she was sewing, while she was washing clothes, cooking, eating, playing, even while she was sleeping. Her parents were very proud of her. So before the pandemic, I routinely did a mantra practice when I was walking, you know, here or there. I just do Kwansin Bolsa while I was walking. And then the pandemic came, and so I wasn't walking very much. And so after being sequestered at home, I noticed a real change in my practice. It wasn't as tight as it used to be. And I think that was just because, partly because I was no longer doing this this mantra practice when I was walking around. What mantra practice does for me is help me to stay in the present moment. It can be a constant reminder to practice. It can help cut off thinking. Sometimes I'll wear this wrist mala, the same thing, just to remind me to practice. You know, I around the house, I'll have it on and I'll, oh, where am I? I'm here. Practice. During the pandemic, I started to vocalize things more, talking to myself. Being home at all alone at home, there's nobody to give me funny looks, like, what is this guy doing? You know, so it got a little bit out of hand. And after a while, I recognized that this was generating a lot of unnecessary thinking and was hurting my practice. I ran it by Pope Sanim, and he concurred. And so I started to really work on trying to get that corralled. So as soon as the words started to come out of my mouth, talking to myself, my internal voice would repeat, Kwansin Bolsa. And that would really help cut off that vocalization. And it works the same for internal chatter. It's amazing how much internal chatter is really unnecessary too. We've all walked into a room and thought, why did I come into this room? Especially as we get older, more and more. And then we start thinking, what was it I was after? Blah, 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 blah. But really, I've discovered none of that is necessary. As soon as I say why, Kwansin Bolsa, I'll cut it off, and I can just stand there, not thinking at all, in kind of this unknowing attitude. And after a while, it'll just pop up from my subconscious. Oh, yeah, that's why. And a lot of things where thinking isn't necessary to accomplish them, you can do that same thing. Don't think, just trust your unconscious, trust your intuition to bring it up into your consciousness and then act on your intuition. So doing this helps develop the ability to act on your intuition before thinking arises. And that's a very important point. It's very necessary in order to function freely and correctly. Using a mala, running the beads through your fingers, also naturally goes with and assists mantra practice. It's something else to bring you into this moment. You're feeling the beads. It's reminding you to keep the practice going. When I do mantra practice, how it goes depends on my intention. If I do it just to be doing mantra practice, it goes on autopilot, and it's just white noise in the background of my very loud thinking. If I do it because I'm intent on being aware without thinking, then the mantra does help let go of my thoughts as they arise and my mind settles. It's like the mantra is telling the thoughts, shh. Those nonstop thought waves eventually become little ripples. Why we do things, our intent, our direction, it really matters a lot. Success depends a lot on intent. It's motivation. Sewell's first enlightenment. Several years passed, and her friends had long since concluded that Sewell was a little crazy. This didn't affect her at all. She continued to chant all day long, wherever she was. One day she was washing clothes in the river, beating the dirt out of them with a stick. Suddenly the great bell from Majo's temple rang. The sound of the stick and the sound of the bell became one, and her mind opened. She was overwhelmed with joy. She felt as if the whole universe were dancing along with Kwansin Bolsa, who was none other than herself. She herself was Kwansin Bolsa, and Kwansin Bolsa was the earth, the sky, the great bell from Majo's temple, the dirty clothes which lie in a heap on the riverbank. She ran back home, leaping for joy, and never chanted Kwansem Bosal again. Sewell's second enlightenment. During the next few days, her parents noticed a great change in her. Whereas before she had been a quiet, well-behaved little girl, now she would burst into wild laughter for no reason, have long conversations with the trees or clouds, run down the road to the village at breakneck speed like a boy. Her father became so worried that he decided to peep in at her through the keyhole of her door to see what she was doing alone in her room. Kind of creepy. He looked in and first saw the picture of Kwansem Bosal on the wall, next to it, her altar, where the Holy Lotus Sutra should have been, surrounded by incense and flowers. But today it wasn't there. Then she saw Sewell sitting in a corner, face to the wall, sitting on the Lotus Sutra. He could hardly believe his eyes. After a moment of shock, he burst into the room shouting, "What do you think you're doing? Are you out of your mind? This is the Holy Scripture. Why are you sitting on it?" Sewell smiled and said calmly, "Father, what is holy about it?" "It is Buddha's own words. It contains the greatest truths of Buddhism." "Can the truth be contained in language?" At this, Chang began to realize that what happened to his daughter was beyond his grasp. His anger turned to intense puzzlement. "Then what do you think that the truth is?" "If I tried to explain," Sewell said, "you wouldn't understand. Go ask Majo and see what he says." Sewell sending her dad to ask Master Ma reminds me of a widely known encounter involving Master Ma. Once a monk asked him, "Without resorting to the four affirmations and 100 negations, will you please point out directly the reason why Bodhidharma came from the West?" Matsu said, "I'm too tired today to speak with you. Go ask Chi Tsang about it." The monk went to ask Chi Tsang, who said, "Why don't you ask the abbot about it?" "The abbot was who referred me to you," the monk replied. Chi Tsang evaded the question by saying, "I have a headache today and I'm not in a position to speak to you. Go ask my elder brother Hua Hai about it." So the monk went to Hua Hai with the same question. Hua Hai said, "Arrived at this point, I really don't know what to say." The monk went back to Matsu reporting what the two had said. Matsu remarked, "Chi Tsang wears a white cap, while Hua Hai wears a black cap." There's an old Chinese story about two robbers. One wears a white cap and the other a black one. The black-capped robber tricked the white-capped of all his spoils. White-capped Chi Tsang said, "I have a headache today and am not in a position to speak to you." Black-capped Hua Hai said, "Arrived at this point, I really don't know what to say." Sewell said, "If I tried to explain, you wouldn't understand." So what color cap does Sewell wear? The phenomenal world is a world of good and bad, up and down, a world of dualities. Everything is what it is because it is relative to something else. Without these relationships, beyond this relativity, these dualities is the absolute. We really can't say anything about it. We can't even say it is an it. What is this? I don't know. Back to Sewell. So Chang went and told Ma Zhou the story of the past few days. After he had finished, he said, "Please, Master, tell me, is my daughter nuts?" Now it's a shame that Chang didn't ask Master Ma the more important question, the one that Sewell wouldn't answer, the one that Sewell sent her dad to ask Master Ma. Chang had asked Sewell, "What do you think the truth is?" That's the big question, and he missed an opportunity there. Ma Zhou said, "Your daughter isn't crazy. You are crazy." "What should I do?" "Don't worry," Ma Zhou said, and handed him a large rice paper calligraphy with the following inscription: "When you hear the wooden chicken crow in the evening, you will know the country where your mind was born. Outside my house, in the garden, the willow is green, the flower is red. Just put this up in your daughter's room and see what happens. Chang was now more confused than ever. He walked home like a man who has lost his direction. He could understand nothing. That he understands nothing is really a good situation for him, and I hope he continued and turned it into great doubt. There's a saying, great doubt, great enlightenment. Little doubt, little enlightenment. No doubt, no enlightenment. When Sul read the calligraphy on her wall, she simply nodded and said to herself, oh, a Zen master is also like this. Then she put the Lotus Sutra back on her altar, surrounded by incense and flowers. Tested by Great Master Ma. After more hard training, she went to see Ma Zhou at his temple. Zen Master Hoam happened to be visiting Ma Zhou at the time, and the two masters invited Sul to sit down and join them for tea. After she had sat down and poured herself a cup of tea, Hoam said to Ma Zhou, I hear that this young lady has been practicing very hard. Ma Zhou said nothing. Hoam turned to Sul and said, I'm going to test your mind. All right. In the sutra it says, the great mountain Sumeru fits into a mustard seed. Someone enters and breaks the rocks to smithereens. What does that mean? Sul picked up her teacup and threw it against the wall where it smashed. Ma Zhou laughed and clapped his hands. Very good, very good. Now I will test your mind. All right. In Buddhism, the word karma is used very often. You have good Buddhist karma, so I ask you, what is karma? Sul said, excuse me, but could you explain the question once more, please? In all the three vehicles of Buddhism, the concept of karma is used in one sense or another. I am asking you, what precisely karma means? Sul bowed to Ma Zhou and said, thank you, and was then silent. Ma Zhou smiled and said, very good trick. You understand. So karma is often called cause and effect, but that fails to really convey its incomprehensibility. Karma encompasses the interpenetration of all things. Sul's adult life. As Sul grew up, she always kept a perfectly clear mind. Outside, her actions were ordinary actions. Inside, her mind was the mind of a bodhisattva. Eventually, she married and raised a large, happy family, all of whom were devout Buddhists. Many people came to her for help and teaching. She became known as a great Zen master. Sul's unmoving mind. One day, when she was an old woman, her granddaughter died. She cried bitterly during the funeral and kept crying back at her home as the visitors filed past to offer their condolences. Everyone was shocked. Soon they were whispering. Finally, one of them went up to her and said, you have attained the great enlightenment. You already understand that there is neither life nor death. Why are you crying? Why is your granddaughter a hindrance to your clear mind? These people, they don't understand correct function in their situation. What do you do when someone's crying? You comfort them. Sul immediately stopped crying and said, do you understand how important my tears are? They are greater than all the sutras, all the words of the patriarchs, and all possible ceremonies. When my granddaughter hears me crying, she will enter nirvana. Then she shouted to all the visitors, do you understand this? No one understood. Sul, being a great Zen master with an incredibly strong center, that unmoving mind, let go of her pain and with great compassion taught them. This is a remarkable demonstration of her having long ago taken that one more step of functioning as a bodhisattva in this moment. She is fully awake to substance, truth, and function. She's really a Zen rock star. Coda. How do we improve the ability of our minds to stay centered, unmoving? Zen Master Tahui wrote a letter to old Langman Chang Shu and explained how. Tahui lived, I don't know exactly when, I didn't look it up before this talk, but he predates this in this whole story. And he also was one of the original teachers that really taught the Wadu. So his letter, part of it, as soon as you become aware of gradually conserving power in the midst of afflictions of daily activities, this is where a person acquires power. This is how a person achieves Buddhahood and becomes an ancestral teacher. This is how a person changes hell into heaven. This is where a person sits in peace. This is where a person gets out of birth and death. At this point, it's extraneous to speak of Buddhas or ancestral teachers, of mind or nature, of the original or the wondrous, of principle or phenomena, or of good or bad. If you can believe in these words, this is what Yung Chia meant when he said, walking is also meditation. Sitting is also meditation. Speaking or silent, moving or still, the body is at rest. These are not empty words. Please act according to them without ever changing. Then, although you have not yet witnessed the scenery of your own fundamental state fully, though you have not yet seen your own original face clearly, what was raw will become ripe, and what was stale will become fresh. Be sure to remember where you save power is where you gain power. So what is this power that Tahui is talking about? It's about having an unmoving mind. How we keep our minds is most important. Zen Master Taigo, he's a Korean Zen master, I believe from the 16th century, said the same thing when teaching how to work with koans. Just go on like this, more and more alert and clear, investigating closely, like an infant thinking of its mother, like someone hungry, longing for food, like someone thirsty, thinking of water. Rest, but do not stop. Contemplate more and more deeply. This is by no means a contrived state of mind we aim for here. So about a contrived state of mind, Ta Hui wrote, you must diligently reflect back on this, but without struggling with it as you reflect back. If you struggle, you waste power. Didn't the third ancestral teacher say so? The third ancestral teacher said, when you try to stop motion to return to stillness, the stopping causes further commotion. And then back to Taigo. If you can truly function like this, then you arrive at the place of saving power. This is also the place of gaining power. So saving power means not throwing power away. Not throwing away power means coming back when your mind moves. It's very simple. Coming back. That's what this little mala is for, what I use it for, what the Kwansin Bolso practice, what I use it for. It's all to remind me to practice, to come back to this moment.